Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and quit college after one day to join the Army. He later earned his medical degree from Wayne State University School of Medicine and has worked at Beaumont Hospital for the last 40 years. Today, he's the Director of Pediatrics, Hematology, and Oncology at Beaumont and has established the Cancer Survivor Scholarship Program, which grants scholarships to 40 students per year. His name, Dr. Charles Main, a modern-day hero. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dr. Charles Main, the Director of Pediatrics, Hematology, and Oncology at Beaumont Hospital. The legendary Dr. Main. Doctor, it's an honor to have you. Welcome.
Thank you very much, sir.
Can you start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
I grew up not too far from where we are right now in the Fisher Building. We were actually, we lived at Cass and Alexandrine, and then we moved over to Euclid and 14th. I went to Thirkel, the grade school. My parents were both high school graduates. My dad had come from Vermont during the Depression looking for work, and my mother had come over from Canada, and they were both the oldest of six. They were wonderful, wonderful, hardworking people. They both worked full-time. There was a time when my grandmother, who had come over from Scotland, took care of my sister and I. And we were poor, I would say, at that time. And it was one of those situations where you never knew it. Everybody was in the same boat. It was a predominantly Jewish neighborhood. There was great food. Great bakeries. I was introduced to the bagel at that time, and I've never lost my desire for them. And it was a happy childhood. I would go over to Canada to my grandfather's farm in the summer, take the bus over and the bus back, and it was good.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
The one thing I can remember from my dad was his message was always, you know, early is on time is late. You know, be prompt. You only have one chance, you know, to make a good impression. He was a great, great talker. He drove truck, delivered nuts and bar supplies to bars around Detroit. He, at one time, later on in his life, something came up, and it seemed as if he was perhaps a little bit prejudiced. And I said, Dad, that's a side of you that I've never seen. And he said, it's a side of me I never wanted you to see. He said, I realized that feeling that way was wrong, and I didn't want to raise you and your sister that way, that it's just not right.
What were the first couple jobs you had?
First job I had, I delivered the Detroit Times. And at that time, you worked up. You delivered the Times and then the Free Press, and the ultimate route at that time was to deliver the Detroit News, because it was easy to deliver because every house in the neighborhood took the paper. And I did that, and then later worked at a grocery store as a packer and carry-out boy. And then from that, the last year of high school, I worked as a usher at the Great Lakes Theater on Grand River.
You graduate high school, you decide to enroll at Wayne State University, and you last one day. Tell us about that.
Well, during the summer, I had gotten an incredibly good job. I had put an ad in the paper right as I was getting out of high school. I was a little tired of being working as an usher in a theater. I put an ad in the paper, ambitious high school graduate desires summer work. And I wanted it to start with an A, so it would be up near the top. At that time, they had the Bulldog edition. The Sunday paper came out Saturday night as well as Sunday. I got a call Saturday night from a gentleman, and he was looking for someone to drive him around the country. He had various businesses in different parts of the country. He wanted a driver, and a person that would work at different locations. I went over and saw him, and we left Tuesday for Rapid City, South Dakota, where he had a ranch. And I worked for him all that summer. He wanted me to go to school to be an engineer and work for him. And I said, no, somewhere in my soul, and I don't know where it came from, I wanted to be a doctor. I think that it might have come from my sister had had polio in 1947, and I remember visiting her many times at Herman Kiefer and meeting the pediatricians and the physicians that took care of her, and they seemed to be such caring, intense people, and just did a fabulous job taking care of my sister, and I thought that seemed like the kind of life that I would like to have. And so I said, no. When this gentleman asked me to go to school to be an engineer, I said no. I still lived at home. I went to Wayne for one day. I came home that night, and I said, this is just like high school. This isn't what I thought college was going to be like. So the next day, the friend of mine that was driving, instead of going to Wayne, we drove downtown. We took the test, joined the Army, and left the 1st of October for Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Your Army career lasted 6 months.
At that time, it was the first, they had a program where it was 6 months of active duty and 7.5 years of active reserve. So we were trained to be Army corpsmen, and then we were in the 323rd General Hospital, which was a local General Hospital Army Reserve that was down at Fort Wayne in Detroit, and we did that for 7.5 years.
Where did you get your degree for being a doctor?
I went to Wayne State University. That's when it was down right on Rivard and Gratiot, before they moved up to the medical center. At that time, our class was about 105 people. I think it's up over 250 at this time. The other major difference, I think our class, we had about 6-7 girls, and now I think the classes are close to 50% women. It was an incredible experience. A lot of wonderful people that I met at that time. I was married, had children by that time, and we lived in the Jeffries Housing Project. Got food stamps, the whole thing, and it was at that time about 25% of our class lived in the same building that I did, and so it was almost like being in some ways an undergrad, except a lot more work.
We're talking to Dr. Charles Main. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to a modern-day hero, Dr. Main. Doctor, how was it you ever got into your specialty?
When I was in medical school at Wayne, one of our teachers, in fact, he was voted at that time and then later by the alumni as being the most outstanding teacher that they had met while they were in medical school, was Dr. Julius Rutsky. And at that time, he was at St. Joseph Mercy Hospital in Pontiac as a clinical pathologist. He ran the laboratory as a pediatrician and as a pediatric hematologist. And he would come down to Wayne and give lectures on hematology. And they were outstanding. He was just a phenomenal teacher. And I later learned that he was, because, you know, you stayed up until 11 o'clock at night making slides with him, you know, many, many, many nights. And so I ended up going to St. Joe as an intern, then did pediatrics, and then he asked me to be a pediatric hematologist fellow training with him, which I did. And then when he moved to Beaumont, I followed him, and we went to Beaumont Hospital. And when I finished my fellowship, he asked me to stay on and be his partner. And he was just an incredible mentor. I mean, nothing came before the patients. It was, whether it was, you know, your family, your own personal comfort, your own personal life, anything, the patients always came first. And it was, I never thought that I made the wrong choice. I mean, he was just an incredible teacher. Tough, but incredible.
What is leukemia in layman's terms, doctor?
Well, normally in your bone marrow, you make red blood cells, and they live about 100 days. You make platelets, which are small pieces of cells that plug up holes in blood vessels. And you also make various types of white blood cells. Some of those white blood cells will come out of the bone marrow, fight infection, last maybe 6 hours, and then they're gone. Many of those white blood cells there can become malignant. They become arrested in one stage of their development, and instead of going on and maturing, they just divide. You have 2, you have 4, you have 8, you have 200, you have 1,000, you have 1,000,000, and they crowd out all the normal cells that are being produced in the bone marrow, and then they overflow into the bloodstream. So what leukemia is, it's an overproduction of an abnormal, you know, type of white blood cell. And you end up with a patient that has a low red count, they're anemic, they have a low platelet count, they tend to bleed, they have a low normal white count, and they're very, very susceptible to infection.
When you became a doctor in 64, the save rate or the survivor rate was less than 2%.
That's correct, sir.
Today, what is it?
Today, you would expect a child walks into your office with leukemia, you'd expect that they have an 85% chance of surviving and going on and living a normal life.
Phenomenal change. What's changed?
Well, the biggest part of the change has been the new drugs are available, new supportive drugs are available. There are other specialists that assist you. I mean, without pediatric infectious disease, without pediatric intensive care, we wouldn't get those kind of numbers. But the biggest single thing is what we call cooperative group trials. We are part of 250 hospitals in the United States and Canada. And if a child comes in today with leukemia, we contact Children's Oncology Group, and the children are assigned to our particular treatment. And generally, there you are comparing the treatment of a new treatment versus the standard treatment. And you slowly improve. These have not been giant steps, you know, since the 1960s. It's been a 2% difference and a 3% difference and a 1% difference. And we have finally arrived at where the survival rate now is near or over 85%.
Can you share with us a few stories about a few of your kids? You've treated and loved over 1,000 children with leukemia. Can you share a couple stories, please?
Well, they're all incredibly special children. I mean, there is not one that is not a special child. They mature a great deal by what they go through. And I have actually had children come to me, you know, when they were in high school or when they were in college and say, you know, why am I different than the other children that I go to school with? You know, and I say, it's because you went through. You have faced death, and these children are still in their partying mode. And you have developed an old soul. And that's why now you tend to get along more with, you know, with adults than you might with your own children. I took several children one time to a Michigan State football game, and a friend of ours went along, and she was being treated for breast cancer. And we had a box lunch before with the game, and it was very interesting how the group sorted out into the people that were getting chemotherapy and the people that had not experienced cancer. It was not on an age basis. It was not on a gender basis. It was not on any other basis. It was they had something in common stronger than any other, you know, grouping that might have come along. And it was because of what they were going through. But the children they're all special children.
Can you talk about one or two specific children?
I have one young man. He was a wild one, you would say. And I remember one day getting a call from him, and he was home. And I said, "Steve, why are you home?" I said, "You're supposed to be in the hospital getting your chemotherapy." And he said, "I just got tired of it, so I just took out the IV, and I went out on Woodward in front of Beaumont Hospital there and put up my thumb, and someone picked me up and took me home." He said, "So now I'm home." And I said, "Well, nurses have called me, and they're you're missing." He said, "I just need a couple hours at home, then I'll come back and finish my chemotherapy." And I said, "Steve, if I can ask you one question, you're standing out on Woodward with your pajamas on, and you've got your thumb up, who picks up someone like that on Woodward Avenue? And he said, Dr. Main, he said, one geek will always pick up another geek. And I said, okay, that's fine. When can we expect you back? And he said, I'll be back in about 6 hours. And fortunately, he was one of our cures, and he is now a child therapist in Atlanta, Georgia, and extremely successful, extremely mature, and has left that geek part of his life behind.
Amazing story. We're talking to a legend, Dr. Charles Main. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Charles Main. Doctor, recently you treated a local person, Miles Levin, the famous person from Cranbrook High School. He was a guest a couple months ago. Can you share what you've learned from Miles?
Normally, I wouldn't talk about a patient, you know, specifically, but he has given me his permission, and he has been very, very, very public with what, you know, he has gone through. He, again, is an incredibly special, you know, young man. I've learned a great deal from him. I had the privilege of attending his graduation from high school at Cranbrook, and he gave a talk there, a speech, you know, to the students. I have paraphrased it several hundred times, you know, since then, to my own children, to friends, to other patients, because it so moved me. Here was this young man that had cancer, standing in front of this group of graduating students from Cranbrook High School, and he told them that many, many people talk about getting the short end of the stick. They're so concerned about they got the short end of the stick. You know, and he said, all of us, including himself, in that room, got the long end of the stick, that they should look at it that way. You know, because of their families, because of their economics, you know, and because of the type of education, because of the opportunity that they had to go on to college, they got the short end of the stick. And with that short end of the stick came responsibility. You know, that they had the responsibility to help people that truly did get the short end of the stick. And I realized sitting there, even though I was 50 years, you know, older than the students sitting there, that I had gotten the long end of the stick. And that I really had no right to complain about my life or anything going on in my life. That with that long end of the stick, you know, came a responsibility. And I thank him for that very original thought and for that very, very moving presentation that he made that day, and for what he has done for other patients throughout the world with the comments that he has made, you know, on his blog. I love him. I respect him. He's an incredible, incredible young man.
How's he doing?
He is not doing well. And I think if people that visit his blog, you know, can see that. There have been recently comments, you know, by his mom and by his dad. And unfortunately, we talk about, you know, success rates. But none of them are 100%, and there are some patients, unfortunately, you know, that as hard as they try and as hard as we try, you know, they don't do well.
He's said many things. One of the things he said recently is, cancer is a soul-shaking disease.
Wow. And that is true. I mean, it is a soul-shaking disease for the patient especially, but also for the families. I mean, I see tremendous emotional changes in the mother, the father, and many, many times the siblings. Over the years, I must say that in the families where the child, you know, has survived cancer, we've seen more long-term emotional difficulties in the siblings than we have in the patient. And I think that that happens because so much time and energy is focused on the patient, and the siblings don't get, you know, that much time. It is something that we see over and over again.
We're talking to Dr. Charles Main. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Dr. Charles Main. Doctor, you've seen hundreds of children breathe their final breath. What have those experiences taught you about life?
The one thing that I've seen repeatedly in situations like that is the incredible how unselfish, you know, these children are when they get to that situation. They realize, even the youngest child, what is happening to them. And they continue to protect, you know, their parents and their siblings, you know, from what is going on. I remember one Saturday morning I came in to see a four-year-old little girl, and she was not going to live another 24, 48 hours. And I started to talk to her. She was laying in bed watching television. Mom and Dad were sitting there with her. And she said suddenly to her mom and dad, quietly, "I'd like to talk to Dr. Main alone. Would you please leave the room?" So mom and dad left the room, and she said, "Dr. Main, I can't see." And I said, "Well, you're watching television." She said, "I'm only doing that for my mom and dad. I don't want to frighten them." She said, "They're going through too much, you know, right now." And I said, "You know, I think your mom and dad can take this. Your mom and dad, you know, love you. They want to help you." And I said, "I think it would be important for you and your mom and dad to talk about this, you know, right now. So I'm going to get them, bring them in the room, and you can talk to mom and dad about the fact that you can't see. And the three of you can share this, you know, the same way, you know, you're sharing what's going on." So we got mom and dad. They came back in. She told mom and dad what was going on, and they hugged and they kissed and they told each other that they loved each other. And she was much calmer, and she died 24 hours later. But that is something that I see, you know, repeatedly, where the child does everything that they can to protect their family from what they're going through.
Talking about the mom and dad, they say that the hardest thing for a marriage to survive is the loss of a child.
I would have to say, in my experience, that is true. What'll happen is, you know, males and females, moms and dads, grieve differently. And many times, you know, the mother, but not always the mother, will want to continue, you know, to be, to think about the daughter or the child, to maintain their bedroom, you know, to not get rid of their clothes or their toys. And the father, his way of handling might be, you know, let's, you know, paint the room, you know, give everything away and get on with our lives, kind of thing. And it's very, very difficult. I've had families that I was very close to that would have to have prolonged counseling, you know, to save the marriage. I've had other families where that it has not happened. They've ended up, you know, getting a divorce just because what they went through. Other families, the two of them seem to work it out, and many times this will happen if they have been an equal part of administering the care. Sometimes the families are in an extremely difficult situation, and the dad has to continue to work. Dad has to work full time, and he's not there for many of the treatments. So mom, you know, gets involved to a different level than perhaps the dad is. But it is extremely, extremely stressful on their relationship.
In the last segment, you talked about the siblings. You've got a program entitled Sibling Saturday.
We've always tried to get the siblings involved. I mean, we have a holiday party that we bring the siblings to, we have a fair. When the Birmingham Fair, we bring all the children so that the siblings will be involved. And one of our social workers several years ago came up the idea of Sibling Saturday. And for a Saturday morning, the siblings are invited, you know, to our office. And we take them through what their brother or sister goes through when they come in. We show them, you know, we show them x-rays, we show them blood smears under the microscope, we take them to the pharmacy and show them how different chemotherapies are mixed, we show them how IVs are given, and then we show a brief Charlie Brown movie about one of the children getting leukemia and what is the effect of it on the brother or sister. And then after the movie, they will ask the children, is it difficult having a brother or sister that has leukemia? Well, none of the children, you know, no, there's no problem, it's easy. But if there's usually one volunteer that'll say, yeah, one time my brother got to go to a hockey game and I didn't go. Well, that seems to be, you know, give the approval to all of them to discuss, you know, problems that they've had with having a brother or sister, you know, that has cancer, and then they can open up. And in our notes that we've gotten back from the children, we've had ones that would say, this was so helpful, I'd like to come in once a month and do this, just because they had the opportunity to discuss their feelings and their experiences. And it's been, you know, very, very, very helpful for the siblings.
Doctor, you have a very strong faith. Why does God allow children to suffer and die?
I don't know the answer to that question. I can tell you how I answer it for myself. You know, I believe that there is a God, and I think that God has given us, you know, the opportunity to live and to learn, and He has also allowed His own Son, you know, to die, and all of those things together are the reason for me. But it's still extremely, extremely difficult, you know, to have something like that happen.
Leukemia doesn't strike children. Many adults. Recently, Tom Snyder died. A week or so ago, Bill Walsh, the famous San Francisco football coach, died. Talk about leukemia with adults.
It, just like diabetes, you know, is different in children, leukemia and cancer is different in adults. It is usually a different type of leukemia than we see in children. And the success rates with the treatment are much, much different than they are in children. Children are just amazing how much chemotherapy they can tolerate. When you sit down and talk to adults about the dosing that we use to give to children, they just cannot imagine giving that amount of medicine to one of their adult patients. They just... their bone marrows, their heart, their lungs just cannot tolerate, you know, that dose of chemotherapy. So as a rule, the type of leukemia that we see in adults is different than what we see in children. The medications are different, and unfortunately the results of the treatment is not as good as it is with children.
We're sharing with a modern-day hero, Dr. Main. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Main. Doctor, you're revered by thousands of people. A lot of people call you a modern-day hero. Some people call you a saint. I don't know if your wife Rhonda's ever called you a saint. Are you a hero?
No more than the other people that I work with at Beaumont Hospital. I mean, I am dedicated to what I do, but I see the same level of dedication in the other, you know, pediatric specialists that I work with, in the nurses in my office, the nurses on the floor, even the secretaries and the lab technicians that work in our office. So it to get that kind of praise is from a team effort. It is not just me. It is definitely a team effort.
Who are your heroes?
I would have to say that the heroes that keep me going are the children that I deal with. Whenever I've been in a difficult situation or experienced some pain or getting a surgical procedure done, and there is some discomfort, you know, I always stop and think, think of what you've put these children through and what they don't complain about. And by doing that, I can get through those experiences. So what they go through and the kind of people they come out being at the other end, they are my heroes.
Talking about heroes, a lot of these people are from a single family, a single parent background. And there's a Children's Leukemia Foundation that helps these people. Can you talk with us a little bit about that foundation?
In 1947, the summer of 1947, my sister had polio. And that same summer, the family that lived across the alley from us lost a child with leukemia. And their name was Harry and Sylvia Brown. Harry and Sylvia, shortly after that, founded the Children's Leukemia Foundation. It has gone on since that time, and they have done a great deal of things for families that have children with cancer and now adults with cancer. And they, Harry, unfortunately, has passed. Sylvia is still alive. She's in her 90s and is still active, you know, with the Children's Leukemia Foundation. And I would like to give them a plug, if it's all right. Their number is 800-825-2536. And again, for families with any type of cancer that are in need, I think they would find them helpful.
Richard and Debbie Astrin and yourself started a scholarship program. Can you tell us about that?
The Birmingham Merchants were having a fundraiser about 20 years ago, and they came to me and said, if we gave you some money, what would you do with it? And I took it very seriously, talked it over with my family, with my wife, with the people in the office, and we came up with the idea of giving a scholarship to a child that had leukemia who might otherwise not be able to go to college. It has grown and grown tremendously since then. We've given over $400,000 to close to 90 different students. This fall, we'll have between 35 and 40 children in college. We had a girl last year graduate from law school. We've got a couple in medical school. We've had them go to school to be firemen, beauticians, you know, many different things. And it is has just been incredible. We have a fundraiser, and if anyone is interested in hearing more about the scholarship or about the fundraiser, it's the website is starsguitars, all one word, .org.
In your opinion, what makes a great doctor?
For me, I think if they can treat the patients the way they would want to be treated, the way they would want their mother treated, the way they'd want their wife or their children treated, and do that, that's all it takes. It's a very, very simple message. You know, don't treat people any differently than you would ask to be treated yourself.
Some would say, doctor, that you're more a minister or a counselor than you are a physician.
Sometimes you feel that way because you get so close so quickly, you know, to these families, and they trust you a great deal, so that there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that goes with that. And sometimes you're asked medical questions, sometimes you're asked to address issues that are not in the medical field. And again, you do the best you can. Sometimes you have to refer them to a professional in another area. But it's part of what goes along with you know, being a doctor.
You're 70 years old. You've been at Beaumont 40 years. When you're in town, you go to that hospital 7 days a week. You work, you're 7 by 24. Why do you keep doing it?
It is extremely, extremely satisfying. And as I said earlier, the type of people that you work with is phenomenal. The relationship you're able to make with the patients just is great. And I just can't imagine doing, you know, anything else. I truly, truly enjoy it. Weekend night call is getting a little old, but getting up and going to work, I can't imagine just, you know, sitting home watching television or something like that.
Over the years, you've had offers from all the great hospitals in the States to earn a lot more money, no doubt, become more famous, and you've stayed at Beaumont all these years. Why?
it's for me, it's been an incredibly great place to work. I mean, I see in the employees there is an unwritten rule, an unwritten mission to treat the patients the way you would want to be treated. And I think that comes from most of the physicians, most of the people that work there live right in that community, and that is their hospital. And by that is passed on to new employees, not in any textbook, not in any speech. It's just by what they observe. And all the way from the dietary to security, and especially the nurses and the other people that I work with, it's just been a phenomenal, phenomenal experience, and I just couldn't imagine packing up and going somewhere else.
You regularly talk about your kids, these 1,000-plus kids. Do you stay in touch with them as they get older?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I stay in touch with the children as they get older. For one thing, it's part of the program. You want to know if there's any late effects that they are having, you know, from the treatment, from the disease, and so that they can teach us things by, you know, coming in contact with them. And we have the opportunity to teach them things, you know, as well. So I keep in touch with the patients. Yesterday I saw three that had been off therapy for over 5 years. They come in once a year, and I keep in touch with families that have lost children if they choose, you know, to keep in touch with us.
You've seen a lot of families. Some of them view that they get the short end of the stick in Miles'
right.
terminology. Others, even though this horrific thing has happened, they still view that they've led special lives. What's the difference, Doctor?
There are a lot of different things that figure into that. I mean, the family's own personality. Some people are positive. Some people are not, you know, are negative. But there's also a certain spirituality, you know, associated with it. Many times, the families that have certain spirituality of whatever it happens to be for them, for their family, seem to handle the stress of what they're going through, you know, better than the families and the patients that are not. But it's not 100%, and there's differences both ways.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I would tell them the same thing that I've told my own children, that get as much education as you possibly can. By doing that, you will have a greater opportunity to find a job that will be satisfying for you. If you don't go to school, if you don't have an education, you are much more limited as to what your career might be. The second thing I tell them is every morning when you get up, thank God for the fact that you live in the United States. And that's pretty much it. My own children, I have also told them that they are not in competition with me, and to keep that in mind. They are not in competition with other people. They're only in competition with themselves, and it's up to them to see that with the talents that they have, that they do the most that they possibly can. But they will not be judged by what they do in comparison to me, to their brothers or sisters, or to other people.
Dr. Main, you've made a difference in this world. Thanks for the thousands of families that you've helped. It's been an honor to have you.
Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be another icon, George Will. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.